I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So the United States currently accounts for about 15% of global greenhouse gas emissions. Yes. China accounts for roughly 30% of greenhouse gas emissions. How do we, even if we get to net zero, how do you get China, India, and the other countries to be good partners?
China is doing a lot. Yes, they're still building a bunch of coal-fired power plants.
And they're still burning coal.
Yes, they are. But they are now moving plants away from the cities. The Communist Party wants to stay in power in China, and they listen to the public. When the public says, I can't breathe the air, Xi Jinping is not a dictator. He has to satisfy his constituents, or he's not going to survive.
He's not a dictator?
No, he has to. He has a constituency answer to.
Oh my goodness! When I there's even more to that, but I cannot wait to hear what our next guest has to say about the man who wants to run for office, who wants to unseat President Trump during one of the biggest economic booms our country has ever seen, and when comparing the United States to China regarding greenhouse emissions. He's like, President Xi's a good guy, and he wants to listen to the people of China, and he's not a dictator. This is what a Democratic candidate for the presidency of the United States thinks about the structure of the Chinese government. Just think about what he would do to our country if he were elected. Let's get to our guest, the chief economist at the Heritage Foundation, Stephen Moore, joins us now. Stephen, Michael Bloomberg there. Wow. I couldn't believe that when I heard it.
Yeah, well, let's first. Hi, Annie. Good to be with you. Let's start with just amazing news on the economy. I mean, this is incredible. I talked to the president last week, and I just said, you know, this is amazing what you've done. It's working out better than when Larry Kudlow and I started, you know, working with him 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Usually when these recoveries get older, they kind of run out of steam. This economy isn't running out of steam. It's picking up steam. And by the way, do you remember it was people like Michael Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Nancy Pelosi who kept saying, oh, recession is right around the corner, right?
Yeah.
No recession. I mean, there is no recession anywhere to be seen. And one of the messages here, in my opinion, I mean, I said this on Fox News on Friday morning when the report came out on the jobs, 300,000 jobs. I said, Madam Speaker, stop what you're doing. You know, look at the country. I mean, we're doing better than we've done in 40 or 50 years with the economy, and you're going to impeach this guy? I mean, do you think that it's really lunatic, in my opinion, that they haven't called this thing off? And you know, we're going to spend another 2 months, you know, dealing with this. You know, it's like watching a movie that you already know the ending to. So yeah. What is the point of this?
We're speaking with Stephen Moore, the chief economist at the Heritage Foundation. You said you spoke with the president last week. You know, you talk about this, the economy picking up steam. We are growing while, from what I understand, the global economy is slowing. Imagine what the USMCA would do. Imagine what a deal with China would do. Meanwhile, we're talking about a communist China here that the president is trying to get a trade deal done with. If he were able,
by the way, that little clip that you played, that was Bloomberg that said that.
Yes, and with a PBS reporter saying that he basically is suggesting that the President Xi there is only interested in what the constituency wants. I mean, good grief, he got rid of his ability to lose elections in the future.
Here's the point, you know, regardless of what you think about, regardless of what you think about climate change, I mean. The fact is that even if the United States didn't even exist, even if every American just up and died and we stopped, you know, our factories, we stopped our steel production, our auto, and our technology, it wouldn't make any difference because China is emitting so much pollution into the air. And these You know, liberals like to believe what they want to believe, right? And so they actually believe that China cares about climate change.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, they don't care about climate change. They care about one thing, economic supremacy. And if they have to use coal or oil or gas or, you know, they'll use whatever energy source they can to power an economy with 1.3 billion people. And so, you know, this idea, we are not, in fact, you know this because I've mentioned this on your show a couple months ago. The United States, we've actually reduced our carbon emissions more than any of the European countries or any of the other countries in the world. And yet somehow we're the villain.
Yeah, we're always the villain, but it's always interesting who is perpetrating us as the villain. It's always the Democrats. You look at a guy who wants to run for office on the Democratic ticket who doesn't even understand how President Xi is oppressing the people in his country, or at least the government in China is oppressive. It's not a place that you go to enjoy freedom. And this guy wants to implement massive government control over so many other things, that securities that he's trying to persuade voters. If you give me some of your freedom, I'll provide you some of those securities. That's going to be massively expensive, and the security is never good as good as it could be unless you provide it for yourself.
Well, you know, this is really the sucker punch of every, you know, Marxist, Leninist, communist, socialist, whatever. They always say, yeah, you're going to have to, we're going to take away your freedom, but you're going to have security. And, you know, there's an old saying, if you give up your freedom for security, you have neither freedom nor security, right?
Yeah. And you're never getting the freedom back. Yeah.
You never get the freedom back. And B, you know, they don't provide security. I mean, does anybody think that the, you know, Chinese army is a force for good? And so, you know, it comes back to this idea that Trump came into office with a very, you know, particular agenda: put America first, rebuild our economy, be pro-business, get government off the back of our businesses, get the taxes down so we can be competitive. And now the rest of the world is looking at us like, how the hell are they doing that? You know, I mean, you're right. You put it so well. None of the other countries are growing. Germany now looks like they're falling into recession. The rest of Europe is flat. You know, France has big problems. They have people, you know, protesting in the streets. You've got Japan's not growing much. And then China, they're kind of in a free fall. And U.S. economy is just booming. And everybody's saying, I want what they're having.
Exactly.
So we lead by example. That is the role of the United States. It's not to provide foreign aid. It's not to provide all this economic assistance. If we get it right, usually the rest of the world does. That's what happened under Reagan, and I think that's what will happen under Donald Trump. And incidentally, you may not have heard because this just broke, but it looks like they now have a deal with Nancy Pelosi. We only had to wait a year for this. It looks like we may now have that vote on the U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement, which would be a gigantic, gigantic victory for the American economy, American workers, our farmers. So let's hope that that's so. That's the latest press report.
Yeah, I'm reading from Fox News right now. It says a final deal could come together in the next 24 hours, according to sources, paving the way for ratification by all three countries. U.S. stocks were a little changed on the developments.
Well, because they won't believe it till they see it. You know, and you know, Pelosi, why is it taking over a year for this to happen?
Politics.
You know, why has Nancy Pelosi been sitting on this? She doesn't want to hand Trump a political victory, even though it's good for American workers, our farmers, our ranchers, our union. You know, even the union now like this trade deal. It's a better deal for the unions than the old NAFTA. And you know, and Pelosi's held it up.
Hey, Stephen, this is Ryan Wiggins. In light of USMCA and the jobs report and everything that's going positively for the United States, and it looks like maybe even for the rest of North America if this deal gets passed,
yeah,
is it even possible for the unemployment rate to go below 3.5%? Or is it just at 96.5% employment, are we maxed out?
You know, it's a great question, Ryan, because when I was in college, that was 30 years ago, the economists used to say, once you get to about 4% unemployment, you're at full, you know, you're
right
at full employment, because you always have people moving in and out of the workforce, and the person might lose their job, so they take some time to find a new job. So 4% was considered full employment, and now we're at 3.5%, which is a half a percentage point below what used to be considered full employment. By the way, there are some states that have unemployment rates as low as 2.5%.
Wow.
So the answer to your question is we do not have a shortage of jobs in the United States. We have a shortage of workers who are, and by the way, did you see the story this weekend? You know, the Wall Street Journal had a great report saying maybe now is a good time to say no food stamps for people who are, you know, able-bodied, don't have kids in the home, working age, and maybe instead of being on food stamps, they should go out and find a job. And oh my God, the left has gone crazy. Oh, these Republicans, they want to, you know, starve to death people. No, we want to get people into the workforce. And the best thing you can do for somebody who's, you know, down on the luck, get them a job.
So one last question, or kind of just open floor for you
right
now.
Do you think I'm cold-hearted for saying that?
Oh, gosh, no. No, let me hear.
I mean, it's all common sense. Why not? I mean, it'd be one thing if we had a 10% unemployment rate. You know, when Obama massively expanded the food stamp program, you know, he said, oh, we got to have this because there's no jobs. Well, now there are more jobs than there are people to fill them. So why are we still sending out, you know, I think there's still something like 35 to 40 million people still on food stamps.
Yeah, it's shifting the precedent in establishing a new expectation for our ability of able-bodied people who don't have those people. There is a gap that exists for people who are using some sort of federal or state aid, especially I think about mothers. I'm 35. I have three kids myself, and I know people who have had to go on help because they're single parents, and if they go out and get a job, they qualify for less money, like they net less money, and then they have to pay for childcare and everything. That is a whole different circumstance than people who are capable of providing for themselves. And I think that as a country, when you're living off the tax dollars of well-intended, hardworking Americans, asking a little bit of those people who are doing some of the taking to do some of the making, I think that's a responsible thing to do.
I agree.
Let me ask you a question. Speaking of being cold-hearted or not, it's about Christmas shopping. Do you do the Christmas shopping at all in your house?
I do. I do some of it. And, you know, I actually am old-fashioned.
Yeah.
You know, I like to actually go to the store and actually pick out the stuff rather than clicking on the computer screen. But
I'm a
shopper.
So here's the question. This is a little bit of a discussion.
If you're going to ask me if I bought my wife a Peloton, the answer is
no, it's not.
I'm not going there.
That's probably not an economic or in this day and age a wise decision. Did she buy you one? That's a good question.
By the way, I did watch that. Yeah. My wife and I were watching TV last night, and we saw that ad, and I turned to her and I said, do you think that's sexist? She's like, no, I don't even understand what they're talking about.
Exactly.
But funny. Everything offends people nowadays.
Yeah, I have no patience for it. So the question that we have here is, when you are doing a gift exchange, maybe among family members or coworkers, let's say that somebody sets a budget of $50 for a gift exchange. The question is, should you spend $50? No matter what it takes, like spend up to $50, because this is an economics question. This is why we're asking you. Or should you acquire something that is worth $50, but if you spend less because you saved, that you can get away with spending $30 on a $50 item? Which do you think is the correct way to do it?
I think it's the thought that counts.
Are you a politician too?
Look, I mean, some of the best gifts that I've ever given, you know, it didn't even cost a lot of money, but,
amen,
you know, I found something that, you know, they couldn't find. But look, it's not about the money. It really is about, you know, really doing stuff that means something. You know, my best gifts I've got, my kids, they drew the picture. They made something for me in their art class, and I still have those. I still have those things. You're a mother. You're 35 years old. I'm, you know, 20 years ahead of you. So,
yeah.
I mean, I still have that stuff that my third and fourth graders give me, and those are the things that really mean the most to me.
Priceless.
And
right?
That's what I do, Steven. I draw people cards and I tell them, here, this is for you. It's the thought that counts.
Steven, we're going to need your address. you're going to be getting a nice gift from the Andy Fry Show this year. Well, it's always great to talk to you. We appreciate your insight and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Lots of news coming out, and we'll have you back on here soon to talk about it. Thanks so much, Steven. Merry
Take
Christmas.
Care.
Bye. Chief Economist at Heritage Foundation. He kind of copped out on that.
Gosh, he's funny.
Yes, he did.
That was a political answer. Yeah, and I'm going to let him get
away
with
Macron.
It. Because I didn't prepare him for that. I like to throw those little curveballs every once in a while. And I just absolutely adore, it makes my week when I make Stephen Moore genuinely laugh.
Oh, man.
Because he cackles. And it just makes me smile and be happy.
I bet when he does interviews, there are very few funny questions asked.
Yeah, no kidding.
So he probably gets a huge kick out of it.
Yeah,
he's got a good sense of humor.
Yeah, let's talk about the stock market. That's not exciting. But then
I don't know.
You start
He's excited about anything, though.
That is true. It's crazy. So the USMCA deal potentially reached with Nancy Pelosi to get this passed. Watch the stock market go after that takes place. And now we find out that on top of the impeachment inquiry that the Judiciary Committee is holding right now on Capitol Hill, and on top of the fact that the IG report has been released, which you can read at 971talk.com/Annie or by going to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Annie, the president's going to speak soon.
Ah!
And that could be the rest of the show. I might have to tell Hans von Spakovsky to just take a hike because the president is speaking. But we wouldn't do that. Hans is going to react to all of this news of the day. The president is going to speak, and I'm sure that's going to be must hear. So we have a packed show, and we need you to stay here with us and encourage us to carry on. It's a lot going on.
We'll reward you with a Christmas giveaway.
Yeah, and a picture drawn by Ryan Wiggins. It could be offensive. We'll be right back. This is just the opposite of the day today. So should we just play more of it? What's your favorite Christmas movie, Katie?
Oh, Polar Express.
Yes, yes.
Or How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Those are my two. Those are my two.
The Jim Carrey
Grinch.
Oh, it's the worst Christmas movie ever made.
So good.
Do you like that? Wait, first of all, Jim Carrey, yay or nay?
Oh, big yay.
Big yay.
Yeah.
Okay, because Jim Carrey, people are either...
Well, his politics, he's kind of gotten weird in the last decade.
About his politics.
I mean, just in general, he's gotten weird.
Yeah, but does it surprise you? Do you look back on Ace Ventura and be like, I bet in 20 years that guy will be completely normal? No.
I don't know.
Comes with the territory.
Yeah, sort of.
He's a weirdo.
But there's a lot of other comedians who aren't crazy, though.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of other Ace Venturas.
That's true.
I mean, I just think his, like, what he's supposed, what did he just do? Not Dr. Doodle, that was Iron Man.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything recently.
Sonic. The new Sonic
movie.
Oh,
yeah, he's going to be the bad guy.
Who's the bad guy in Sonic? I'm sure all the listeners are like screaming at the radio right now because they know who the bad guy in Sonic the Hedgehog is going to be. But regardless.
You don't like him as the Grinch?
No, he's so ugly. It hurts my eyes.
I will tell you this. I liked him better as the Grinch than I liked Johnny Depp as
Willy Wonka.
That's also creepy. Man. And also the Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, weird stuff.
Johnny Depp? No.
Yeah, that was a mess.
Mad Hatter. He was a Mad Hatter.
I think that Johnny Depp's Pirates of the Caribbean, Captain Jack Sparrow, is one of the best characters in my lifetime.
Agreed.
I adore it. I would watch all the subsequent bad movies that he would continue to make, except for aren't they making another one without him, I think?
Maybe.
But I think that Captain Jack Sparrow and the way he did it, only he can do it. And it will live on forever.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to children's hospitals as Captain Jackson. He just literally keeps the costume in his car so that if he has time, he can go be Captain Jack Sparrow to kids. It's fantastic. I also think Johnny Depp's kind of loony too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you know, and you'll never get this out of your head if you know who it is, who he based Captain Jack Sparrow
Keith Richards.
On? Yeah. And you'll never forget it now either, will you?
Because
it really does remind you of Keith Richards.
And it's funny because I'm not somebody who really understands a lot about classic rock is what I guess that would
be. Yeah, Rolling Stones.
Yeah, but I'm not, that's not my domain, my realm. I don't know much at all about it. But if someone's like, oh, Keith Richards, I would go, I think I know who you're talking about.
Captain Jack Sparrow.
But based on Captain Jack Sparrow, not on knowing who Keith Richards is. I'm like, and then Keith Richards was in maybe the third movie as his dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He played.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I didn't follow the series at all.
No,
after the first
good.
One, I kind of got bored with it, but I do like the character.
So, your favorite Christmas movie?
Probably National Lampoon's.
Oh, that's a good one.
Gosh.
That's Tony's, I think, too.
We have three in my house, and they kind of come from different places. Growing up, my family's favorite was It's a Wonderful Life. So, that's a must watch and a must. It's a cry movie every time.
Mm-hmm.
I always cry. My brother George, big brother George, the richest man in town, gets you every time because that's the whole stinking point. I'm going to talk about that more at 2:10, how we've lost our way regarding Christmas. And I'm going to react to the poll that's going on our Facebook page that Stephen Moore, the chief economist at the Heritage, maybe we should have told him to ask Trump that next time he talks to us.
Oh, darn.
What should
you do?
We should just start
when you're with your friends
him.
And you have a budgeted gift exchange of $1 million, should you spend $750,000 if you get it on sale, or should you go for the whole million, or should you do $1,000,001 because you just can do that and then that makes you fancier?
I don't think he has the
We
budget.
Should start dictating all of his meetings with Trump.
Sure.
Here's what you should
can
ask.
Mention this to the president.
And Ryan wanted to give you this Andron picture.
We love you.
That's Who's the sun. And that's you and that's me, and we're holding hands.
So It's a Wonderful Life comes from my family into, like, my parents and my siblings. That I brought that into my little family. Jared's family, my husband's family, he brings in White Christmas.
Love
which
White
is
Christmas.
An amazing movie. And every year I'm like, how is she that skinny?
Mm-hmm.
Not Rosemary Clooney, who is also very thin and beautiful and super talented, but the other one who's the dancer.
Mm-hmm. God, and beautiful. Stunning.
I'm not joking. My arm, my bicep is probably the size of her thigh.
Tiny.
She's just the tiniest human. I'm always like, how does that work? Because it's not like they CGI'd her to look thinner than she is. She's just, and she's so talented. And I love the story there as well. And the general and the military mm-hmm. tie into White Christmas. It's perfect. And then the third one that started with my little family is The Polar Express.
Oh, that movie. That brings me to tears. And, the Polar Express
yes.
makes me cry.
And if you are somebody who is like me and my Christian faith is what is at the center of Christmas for myself and for my family, I know The Polar Express, the story is to go to the North Pole and because there's a doubting child about Christmas and Santa Claus and all that, but he gets to go to the North Pole and he does truly believe when he leaves. But I think that there's an amazing parallel to what the true meaning of Christmas is to me, watching that movie. And seeing somebody who's doubted be challenged and challenged and challenged and have that moment of clarity where that boy understands what is at stake and believing comes to him differently than it comes to other people. But the happiness that he has when he isn't put in a position where he mm-hmm. does truly believe, it's a very magical thing. And I think it's a great, I understand the context of the story as it is presented to children, but I think there's an extra layer of context that can be taken away by adults and by, you know, Jesus believing Christians that watch that and really can take that away with it too. So
and the
I
music
love
is
it.
So good in yep. the movie. Love it.
When we put on the song, the Polar Express song that's got the train going in the background, my kids lose their minds in the Pacifica. They're like bouncing
yeah.
up and down, going nuts. It's the best thing ever.
Just last night, we watched a Christmas movie I haven't seen in probably 20 years. And I watched it so many times when I was younger that I knew the whole movie still, note
Isn't
for note.
Isn't it weird how there's
Isn't
a file in the folder in the back of your brain?
It's
pointy
like the
brain.
Soundtrack of the movie, but it's every, yeah, your pointy little mind just grabs those
brain.
Things, holds on to them. It was Home Alone.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
I
yeah,
watched it with my kids, and I was surprised at how
you
many like random cuss words there were in it. Like, whoops.
You have, what cuss words?
A-S-S. I won't say it.
I'll spell it.
What's that spell?
Ass.
Oh.
Oh, we are just going to say. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, man.
You asked.
Mike, thanks for calling the show.
Hi. Hey, I'm wondering, is there anybody there old enough to remember the original politically incorrect version of White Christmas?
I don't know. Let's ask our resident old guy, Ryan.
Okay, now.
Tell me what the politically incorrect yeah. version of White Christmas is.
Okay, when I can remember seeing it when I was a kid, and what it was is, you remember that part of the movie where they did a minstrel show?
Yes.
What they did, and if you'll notice the movie now, it looks like they skipped a part, and the part that they skipped was they were able to manipulate the lighting that everyone that was white looked like they were wearing blackface, and all their black clothing looked like it was white.
Hmm.
And they did it by flipping a switch, which is why if you watch that portion, the minstrel show, even with the soundtrack, it looks like something's missing.
Oh, that's
but
I never knew. I mean, I knew that the minstrel show part was controversial. They've got the tambourines that have, you know, not dark person-looking faces, but they're literally jet black on there. And the visual there is definitely suggestive of the time, but I didn't realize that they did that to the actual actors and actresses in that scene.
Oh, sure they did. That's why if you watch that part of the movie, you'll notice that the soundtrack seems to skip. And the reason they did, apparently they cut that portion out because too many people must have found it offensive.
That's interesting, Mike.
I've only seen it on TV.
Thanks
so
for the show, for the call. I appreciate it.
I've never seen the DVD. I wonder if that's still on the DVD or if they edit that out for that too, just to be PC.
Katie.
You're right. What I said was funny. Thank you.
No, Katie just sent me a screenshot.
I don't know what you guys are doing.
She didn't send me that in the middle of the show. She sent me, she Facebook messaged me a picture of Sandra Smith and Bill Hemmer looking at each other.
They just look like they know each other well.
I doubt it.
You just said they look like each other's
eyes. You look like they're in love. I always think it's funny how Bill Hemmer he's a very aggressive anchor. He's always leaning over the desk with his hands kind of propped up on it, and I always feel like he's gonna jump out at me at any time. I'm like, I'm really interested in what you have to hear. I don't need to be. The proximity of you to me with this camera doesn't need to be closer, but he's when I think of Anchorman the movie, I think of Bill Hemmer, and I bet Bill Hemmer is a very kind, wonderful person. I love Sandra Smith. I love watching their show in the
morning. They've got good chemistry.
Yes, and that matters a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
They seem like they're friends outside of just working with one another in America's Newsroom. But this image that I just messaged I'm like, this seems like a deep connection here.
I always think about when I speak here on the radio, anybody could clip anything that I say out of context, and I just would look or appear or be presumed to be something that I completely am not.
Like
and
a conehead.
That actually happened. I actually did that.
When I was 10, I was actually.
Oh, I wanted to say that the man who started the ice bucket challenge, who wanted to raise awareness and money for ALS, he raised $220 million with the ice bucket challenge.
God bless that man.
He's 34 years old and he has passed away. It's a very sad thing, but what a legacy to leave behind. You know, when you think about $220 million going towards research, the amount of help he can provide for somebody else, what an amazing thing.
That was one of the first viral challenges I have ever been a part of, or maybe even have known about.
Yeah, it was a really, really amazing one. Let's take a quick break. President Trump is supposed to speak soon. We will carry that for you. So stick with us there. I think that the Senate judiciary, including Lindsey Graham, has announced that they are going to have a press conference at 4 p.m. their time, which will be 3 p.m. our time. So we're kind of monitoring that to see if it would happen any earlier. But we will hear from the president soon. And next, we're going to hear from Hans von Spakovsky, who is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and an expert when it comes to legally explaining in a way that even I can understand about the IG report that's out, about the position in the journey towards impeachment that the Democrats are on, where we are right now. Hans will join us when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. What a busy day it is. So much news happening. The Judiciary Committee has taken a recess right now. They will come back to resume the impeachment inquiry hearings. But we have also received the IG report. And I don't want to waste any more time getting to our guest, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Hans von Spakovsky, joins us now. Hans, great to have you on the show on this busy day.
Sir, thanks for having me. I've been speed reading the IG report since it came out earlier this afternoon.
Well, you tell us then you're what you've gleaned so far with your speed reading from this IG report.
Well, I will tell you that I think, first of all, I think the left-wing media is going to immediately misread this based on a statement in which the IG says, well, we didn't find any documentary or testimonial evidence of political intent to, you know, act in bad behavior. But the incompetence and serious error shown by this report are so great, it confirms what we have thought all along. And what we have thought all along was that the FBI did not actually have the evidence that would justify the opening up of a counterintelligence operation against the Trump campaign. What this report looks at, the FISA applications. So the applications the FBI sent to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court in order to authorize electronic eavesdropping of the Trump campaign and people working for it. And here's just one statement from the report, in which the IG says that the FBI basically failed in its duty to ensure that all of the factual statements in a FISA application are scrupulously accurate. In fact, they identified numerous instances in which the factual assertions that the FBI put into that application were inaccurate, incomplete, or unsupported. And not only that, but once they actually started talking, they hadn't even verified or checked any of the stuff in the Steele dossier at the time they put in the first application for an electronic eavesdropping warrant. Mm-hmm. Apparently, after they had that granted, then FBI personnel started checking the sources in the Steele dossier. And guess what? No surprise. They got back all these reports, FBI personnel did, that contradicted and did not support what Steele was saying in his dossier, yet the next three times when they submitted applications to renew the electronic eavesdropping warrant, guess what they didn't do? They didn't notify the court about all the contradictory information that they had gotten that showed that the Steele dossier could not be relied on.
Yeah, the reaction on the little blurb on CNN right now is FBI probe of Trump campaign was legal and unbiased. So that's the headline that they have up there. But they're also they're so backlogged in news that they're trying to impeach the president that this is actually the B story. I want to read for you and the listeners real quick the statement from U.S. Attorney John H. Durham regarding this IG report. He says, quote, "I have the utmost respect for the mission of the Office of Inspector General and the comprehensive work that went into the report prepared by Mr. Horowitz and his staff. However, our investigation is not limited to developing information from within component parts of the Justice Department. Our investigation has included developing information from other persons and entities, both in the U.S. and outside of the U.S., based on the evidence collected to date. And while our investigation is ongoing, last month, we advised the Inspector General that we do not agree with some of the report's conclusions as to predication and how the FBI case was opened." Basically, to me, it seems like Attorney Durham here is saying, thank you for the IG report. That's not the whole entirety of where Durham is taking his investigation. We thank you for your report, but we still have further business to do based on that information that is in context there. What's your reaction to the Durham response?
Well, what he's saying is that the IG only talked to people inside Justice and the FBI, and there were people actually there who refused to talk to him. John Durham is going outside of the FBI and talking to a lot of witnesses and people with information that the IG never talked to. So, as you say, the IG has issued the report based on what he could find inside the agency, but Durham is going to give a much more complete picture. Look, even with that said, like I said, this report is just devastating because it raises serious questions about the competence of the FBI. In fact, look, there's another statement in there that basically said that managers, supervisors, senior officials had all this information that should have resulted in questions being raised about the reliability of the Steele report and the probable cause supporting the FISA applications, but they didn't do that. They didn't question it. They didn't inform the FISA court about all of those questions about Steele's reliability and the contradictory information they got. What all of this says, you get to the end of this report, and it's very clear to me that the FISA application should never have been granted.
Wow.
And the FBI should never have gotten permission to eavesdrop on the campaign. Listen, I'll tell you one funny provision in there, but it shows you how bad the FBI was. In the FISA application, remember the original one was against Carter Page, mm-hmm. and one of the things FBI cited was Carter Page's contacts with a Russian intelligence agent. Guess what they failed to tell the court? And in fact, one of their lawyers altered an email so the court wouldn't know that Carter Page actually had been working for another U.S. intelligence agency. Huh. It was probably the CIA. And in fact, whenever he had contacts with Russian intelligence officials, he would brief that other intelligence agency on what happened in those discussions. And one of the briefings he gave was on a Russian intelligence agent, and it was that contact that was used by the FBI to justify a FISA warrant, even though the guy was working for another intelligence agency and reporting to that intelligence agency on those contacts. That is so absurd. I couldn't believe it when I read it in the report.
Wow.
Hans, this is Ryan Wiggins. I'm looking at a statement from FBI Director Christopher Wray, who I don't know a whole lot about. I don't know if he's considered to be pretty impartial or if he's still kind of a political actor or what. But he says, based on this IG report, that they're going to modify their processes and the way that FISA is used. Great. You figured they would say that. But, you know, in the future, is the issue that they've been able to use something that's called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act on American citizens, or is this report deeper than that? Is it that they were using it specifically for political purposes, not just for Americans?
Well, one of the things the IG says is that, I mean, first of all, you're right. The FISA report can't be used against Americans unless you can show that that American is an agent of a foreign power. And as I just pointed out, the FBI knew that Carter Page wasn't an agent of a foreign power because he'd been working for another one of our intelligence agencies. But this report raises serious questions about the ability of the FBI to use the whole FISA process in these secret court hearings and in order to get secret warrants. And look, one of the things we're going to have to do, that law is coming up for renewal, and one of the things we're going to have to look at, we need the law. We need it for real counterintelligence operations, but we're going to have to look at it very carefully to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. And Chris Wray had better take steps to make sure this kind of thing doesn't happen again.
We're speaking with Hans von Spakovsky, the senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, an expert on what has been unfolding here today with the release of the IG report. Let me let you follow up here, because I think I asked you sometime in the spring, maybe it was after the Mueller thing had pretty much wrapped up, and you said we need to look forward, or I should say look ahead to the IG report, find out what comes out in there. And I asked you, is this going to be some sort of bombshell? You were very cautious to say that this IG report is an audit of what happened. It was what the Attorney General and the Justice Department decided to do with the IG report, where our focus should then go. Your estimation on what we know with the special prosecutor looking into what was taking place, appointed by Attorney General Barr, based on what we know in the IG report, is this IG report a bombshell or not?
No, I think it is a bombshell because, like I said, it shows the language of the IG is basic and fundamental errors. Basic and fundamental errors made by the FBI agents and their supervisors who were involved in this. And he says that those errors resulted in questions not being raised about the probable cause determination, which justified opening up the investigation in the first place. This is just a report. Mm-hmm. John Durham's investigation is now a criminal investigation, and that's going to be the really big shoe to drop. We know that there were, frankly, it was incompetence at the FBI in doing this. Did it stray over into political machinations against the president? Well, that's something John Durham's going to find out.
So, Hans, I have got about 30 seconds left here. If Durham takes this as far as we expect him to take this, are there some big names, some very prominent people that are in office right now that are serving in our departments in Washington, D.C., or that are maybe no longer in office right now that should be potentially worried about what's going to happen next?
Well, yes. I mean, Brennan is looking at things like John Brennan's involvement in helping to get this whole thing going. Bruce Orr, who's a former Obama Justice Department official, is severely criticized in this report for passing on the information from Steele to the FBI while his wife was working for Fusion GPS, who had hired Steele. And so, yeah, there's a potential down there for, I think, people to be criminally prosecuted. Particularly, by the way, one of the lawyers in this case is mentioned in the IG report, who actually altered an email from the other intelligence agency, telling them that, yeah, Carter Page was a source for them. And he altered the email so for it to say that Carter Page was not a source.
Well, Hans, it's a pleasure to speak with you. We look forward to connecting with you again as more information develops here. Great to have you on, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hans von Spakovsky, the senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, on Twitter at H. von Spakovsky. Coolest name in the business, for sure. Way cooler than Annie Fry, which sounds about as middle of the country apple pies again. I don't. There's Annie Fry, and then there's Hans von Spakovsky, which you have to say like that the first time you say it. Took me like a whole probably 3 or 4 times of having him on the air when I was doing Saturdays to nail that and be able to just say it with confidence.
Most elaborate name I've ever heard.
It's awesome. All right. We'll have that interview up on the podcast. Subscribe at radio.com, and we will have those up for you. You get them right when they become available. So pretty quick turnaround. Radio.com, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Go subscribe to The Andy Fry Show. We'll be back in the 2 o'clock hour with more reaction in the president. Just a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.